Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-ah! I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Our military, our nation, and much of the world is worried that climate change will end the world if we don't fix it by making major changes in our lives. Real science and research show that only about one-third of scientists agree with the end-of-the-world scenario. That's a far cry from the often quoted 97% scientific consensus claimed by the global warming industry. You know, I subscribe to the idea that the best way to protect the Earth, its wildlife, and most importantly, its people, is to harness the tremendously powerful forces of competition, progress, political and economic freedom, as well as genuine environmental stewardship. And that means advancing practical solutions and sensible approaches based on real facts, not hysterica and poor science. Okay, joining me with 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. What's your personal favorite weapon for concealed carry, Skip?
Oh, Colonel, that is such a tough question. I mean, there are so many really nice guns out there, and I have a lot of guns, but, you know, pretty much I have three guns that I carry. I've got, when I want to go light and deep concealment, I have a Smith & Wesson M&P Shield in 9mm, which is fairly compact. But then I have two larger guns that I just love. I have the Ruger 5.7, which is rather esoteric. It's 5.7mm, got a 21-round magazine. I love that, incredibly accurate. And then I also have a special gun. It's a Glock 19 on a special frame called the Gutter Snipe, made by Suarez Tactics. Boy, I love them all. They've all got red dot sights on them. Very accurate, fun to shoot. You know, it's like choosing one gun to carry is like just choosing one woman to marry.
Yep. And I'm sort of like that. I haven't caught up to you yet on number of women to marry.
You stay the way you are, Colonel. Trust me.
I have learned from you, my brother. Okay, here's what we have for you today. On News and Comments by the Colonel, I'm going to discuss our need for partnerships with other nations. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. Then Israeli Uri Goldflam will discuss, yes, Israel. Tom Homan, the former head of ICE, will share about our southern border. And General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We really welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or by Facebook. And now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. We'll start with the news, of course. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, Russia moved warships and a nuclear-powered submarine to Cuba to begin air and naval exercises not far from the coast of Florida. These week-long exercises are touted as part of routine military maneuvers, but come amid heightened tensions with the U.S. over Ukraine. Two American destroyers and two sonar-equipped ships are currently shadowing the submarine. Quote, we're going to watch it. We're going to monitor it. We don't expect that there'll be any imminent threat or any threat at all, John Kirby, White House National Security spokesman, said. At the same time, Russia this month has also launched joint nuclear drills with Belarus, simulating the use of battlefield nuclear weapons.
Russia doesn't like the fact that we're allowing Ukraine to use some of the weapons and munitions we provided to attack areas in Russia. Wow, I guess they think it's okay for them to attack Ukrainian cities, but it's not okay for Ukraine to attack theirs?
And Vladimir Putin has said Ukraine would need to withdraw troops from territories Russia claims to have annexed before a ceasefire could begin. A proposed Ukraine's president called a Hitler-like ultimatum. President Zelensky has long said that Ukraine will not negotiate with Moscow until Russian forces leave all Ukrainian territory, including Crimea. The Russian president also said Ukraine would have to give up on joining NATO before peace talks could start, and the Russian advance stopped. Putin's statement setting out his ceasefire conditions comes as leaders from 90 countries meet in Switzerland to discuss paths towards peace in Ukraine, a summit Russia was not invited to. Speaking to a meeting of Russian ambassadors, Putin called on the Ukrainian government to withdraw from the four regions partially occupied by Russia. Putin said, as soon as Kiev declares that it is ready for such a decision, an order to cease fire and begin negotiations will immediately follow from our side, literally at the same minute, unquote. Ukrainian presidential advisor Podolyak called the proposal a complete sham and offensive to common sense.
A ceasefire and a permanent end to the war is really important, but there doesn't seem to be any middle ground at the moment.
And since the Israeli religious celebration of Shabbat began earlier this month, the situation in northern Israel has become increasingly dangerous. One night, as Israelis gathered to celebrate, Hezbollah launched a barrage of rockets at Kiryat Shmona. In response, an IDF strike killed Talab Sami Abdullah, the commander of the Shabbat attack and the highest-ranking Hezbollah commander eliminated so far in the war. Abdullah commanded Hezbollah's Nasser unit, one of three regional divisions in South Lebanon, considered to be the terror group's first line of attack against Israel and responsible for many of the attacks on northern Israel over the past 8 months. And recently, Hezbollah fired 215 rockets and additional missiles and drones at northern Israel, sparking fires throughout northern Israel. The Iranian-backed group's largest attack against Israel since its near-daily attacks began on October 7. Some 25 firefighting teams and 8 planes are working to extinguish the fires, and Hezbollah has continued to launch rockets into Israel.
Iranian-backed terrorist groups like Hezbollah take delight in targeting Israeli civilians, while they hide behind civilians when they're vulnerable. The stupid thing about this long-used practice is that the UN and many nations pretend not to see it.
And our military says it recently destroyed 2 Houthi patrol boats, 1 uncrewed surface vessel, and 1 drone over the Red Sea in its latest effort to degrade the capabilities of the Iran-backed group. The Houthis, who control the most populous areas of Yemen, targeted a ship in the Arabian Sea as well as 2 in the Red Sea, the Iran-aligned group's military spokesman said in a televised speech. The attack on 1 cargo ship sparked a fire and severely injured 1 of her crew. The rebels launched 2 anti-ship ballistic missiles from a Houthi-controlled area of Yemen into the Red Sea, our central command said, adding there was no damage or injuries from those missiles. The Houthi militia has staged attack on ships in the waters off the country since November in solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza. Our central command said it, quote, "We'll continue to act with partners to hold the Houthis accountable and degrade their military capabilities," unquote. The Houthi campaign has disrupted global shipping, forcing firms to reroute to longer and more expensive journeys around southern Africa.
Terrorists are pure evil. They need to be taken out. Why aren't we hitting them harder?
Well, our Navy prepared for decades to potentially fight the Soviet Union, then later Russia and China on the world's waterways. But instead of a global power, our Navy finds itself locked in combat with a shadowy Iran-backed rebel group based in Yemen. The U.S.-led campaign against the Houthi rebels, overshadowed by the Israel-Hamas war in Gaza, has turned into the most intense running sea battle the Navy has faced since World War II, say our Navy's leaders. The combat pits the Navy's mission to keep international waterways open against a group whose former arsenal of assault rifles and pickup trucks has grown into a seemingly inexhaustible supply of drones, missiles, and other weaponry. Near-daily attacks by the Houthis since November have seen over 50 vessels clearly targeted, while shipping volume has dropped in the vital Red Sea corridor that leads to the Suez Canal and into the Mediterranean. The Houthis say the attacks are aimed at stopping the war in Gaza and supporting the Palestinians, though it comes as they try to strengthen their position in Yemen. All signs suggest the warfare will intensify, putting our sailors, their allies, and commercial vessels at more risk. Quote, "I don't think people really understand just kind of how deadly serious it is, what we're doing, and how under threat the ships continue to be," Commander Eric Blomberg with the USS Laboon told the AP on a visit to his warship on the Red Sea. Quote, "We only have to get it wrong once," he said. "The Houthis just have to get one through."
Okay, this is the most intense running sea battle we've faced since World War II. Why don't we crush them on land and sea? I'm sure we have the forces to do that, and it shouldn't take too long. I'm confused. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing, but we can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a vet, in getting involved and getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Check cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com. This is Colonel Denny Gillum coming up on Frontlines of Freedom. I'll share comments by the Colonel and we'll enjoy some war and wisdom. Then we'll talk Israel with Uri Goldflam. At ease, troops, take a break. When considering precious metals investments, credibility is paramount. That's why I chose Universal Coin and Bullion. They have a long-standing reputation in the industry that instills confidence in investors. Plus, the company's president, Dr. Mike Fulgens, is recognized as America's gold expert by his peers and the U.S. government, and was named Dealer of the Year by the American Numismatic Association. Call 800-UCB-GOLD or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny.
This is Marine Vet Skip Corio with your Home Defense Tip of the Week. Criminals love the cover of darkness. It hides them and provides a tactical advantage and cover for them to launch an attack. Avoid dark alleys and unlit parking lots. When possible, always park under a light and avoid areas with a reputation for high crime. Remember, if you can't see the bad guy, then you can't avoid his ambush. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. It is 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the Front Lines of Freedom all across America. Troops, even if our economy wasn't a mess with inflation going crazy and prices way up out of sight, I'd still recommend that you do some investing in precious metals, gold and silver. I encourage you to join me in purchasing these solid investments from Universal Coin. Find them at universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. Troops, our nation is picking up new allies everywhere. Kenya just became our 19th so-called major non-NATO ally. This gives them privileges in military procurement and cooperation, but no explicit security guarantees. Saudi Arabia, meanwhile, has hopes to be getting full support as it approaches a mutual defense pact with us. These follow Sweden's recently joining NATO as its 32nd member, and last year Finland joined. And in the Indo-Pacific, we're building new relations with allies like Japan, South Korea, Australia, and the Philippines. This proliferation of alliances is central to President Biden's foreign policy. Quote, America's alliances are our greatest asset, end quote, he said upon taking office. By that accounting, we're really looking strong. Biden, of course, is reacting to his predecessor's neo-isolationist and undiplomatic approach in the dual sense of lacking foreign policy finesse and tact. See, Donald Trump snubbed allies that he considered freeloaders on our military strength and spending. He even cast doubt on the mutual defense guarantee of NATO. By contrast, Biden wants to reassure our friends while deterring foes from testing our security commitments. Notably, Ukraine, which is not an ally, was invaded and is now desperately seeking any kind of security pact with us. In general, those who are internationalists believe that Biden, rather than Trump, has the right instinct. In an increasingly multipolar world in which China and Russia vie with us for global influence, it makes sense for Washington to have more friends rather than fewer. And, at best, our allies become cost-efficient vanguards of American power in distant places. But if we commit to defending many friends against many foes, aren't we overextending and therefore undermining our credibility? This risk grows when our mutual defense pacts are one-sided. Would NATO member Iceland, with no army, really join us in a war against China? How about Germany, which has been demilitarizing for decades? This multi-front exposure could create an even worse scenario. In protecting Estonia or Lithuania, we potentially confront Russia. In support of Saudi Arabia or Israel, we could face Iran. Standing with the Philippines, we might oppose China, and so on. These adversaries certainly can work together against us. Isn't it clear that we couldn't defend all of our allies simultaneously? Thus, conflicts that are now discrete in the Taiwan Strait or the Persian Gulf, say, could become theaters of a world war. How about this? Alliances make the most sense only when we and our allies share the same strategic interests. The more specific, the better. The best example is NATO. During the Cold War, it united countries that felt threatened by the Soviet Union. After the Cold War, that unifying interest temporarily waned, that came back with Putin's aggression. This menace is why Sweden and Finland decided to join. But even NATO has design flaws. There's no way to expel unreliable members. These days, there are concerns about Turkey and Hungary. Not least, there's the problem of burden sharing. After a decade of contentious negotiations, Trump's prodding, really, two-thirds of our NATO allies will this year begin to have at least 2% of their GDP spent on their military, as agreed. But one-third won't. America's quasi-allies, those without explicit security guarantees, present another problem. Assuming we have their back, these partners may engage in diplomatic or other kind of confrontation. What if Pakistan gets too pushy with India? Then there's Taiwan. Israel's in a class of its own. These partnerships are inherently ambiguous. Major non-NATO allies don't have mutual defense pacts with us, yet we and they often create the impression that they do, as when Biden swears his defense of Israel is, quote, ironclad. This again creates the question of our credibility. If we don't come to the aid of Israel, Taiwan, or Kenya, won't the adversaries and treaty allies conclude that we're overcommitted? And many of us think that all that should matter is what our interest is at stake. But precisely because we treat all of our alliances as tests of our credibility, we open the door to someone testing it. Another worry is the Biden administration mixing ulterior rationales into its quasi-alliances. For example, it wants a pact with the Saudis not only to deter Iran, but to keep China away and to pressure the Israelis into start working towards a Palestinian state in return for a detente with the Saudis. And there's nothing to keep any of our allies from flirting with Beijing and Moscow. If exclusivity is Washington's objective in a relationship, that should be a part of the agreement. If that's too tough for the partner nation, settle for a trade agreement with no military support. Biden has it partially right. Some American alliances are indeed great assets. The bond with Japan, a good example. Others are now liabilities. Like nobody's sure, for instance, whether the Rio Treaty, signed in 1947, among us and most of the countries in the Western Hemisphere, still exists. If it does, the total number of our allies, full and quasi, is above 70, over one-third of the nations on Earth. Alliances are like all commitments. It's not how many you make, but how well you choose them, that you withdraw from those no longer useful, and how devotedly you honor those that you decide to keep. And don't forget to take into account that our military is presently focused on transgenders, pronouns, and cutting the number of white males, not being combat ready. The rest of the world knows this. We need a very realistic foreign policy, and we need it now. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom, and now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have to share this week, Roland?
Well, the Air Force is bringing on the competition for space launches. For the next phase of the National Security Space Launch Program, or NSSL, the Air Force has added Blue Origin to the mix, along with SpaceX and, of course, the United Launch Alliance. The three companies will compete from 2025 to 2029 for up to $5.6 billion in the U.S. government's top national security launches. The National Security Space Launch Program, or again NSSL, has already conducted 70 launches covering various missions, such as GPS, surveillance, and classified missions for the Air Force, Navy, and the National Reconnaissance Office, which I didn't even know existed. During this next phase of the NSSL, the Space Force is taking a two-lane approach. Lane one will be a commercial type of missions, allowing for a higher tolerance for risk. And lane two will be the more traditional type of launch and will require full mission assurance for the most stressing heavy lift type of launches. This new competition is specifically for lane one, or the higher risk launches, and will include at least 30 missions for the three companies by June 2029. You know, I find it interesting that the Space Force is working with three different companies, but even better yet, other small companies will get the chance to join this competition every year. You know, for years, United Launch Alliance has basically had a monopoly on space launches. However, more recently, Space Launch has been a major player, conducting 90% of all launches last year. Blue Origin, on the other hand, is completely unproven. However, they're about to unveil a new Glenn rocket, which is a larger, upgraded version of its new Shepard rockets. However, they've never launched a military satellite. The next opportunity for more competition is going to come in Q1 of 2025 when the Department of Defense puts out more service requests for launch services. You know, I think this is a case of more competition is actually really good for our country. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thanks, Roland. I always enjoy your comments. Straight ahead on Front Lines of Freedom, we'll discuss Israel with Uri Goldflam. Then we'll talk about our southern border with Tom Homan. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. You're standing tall with Front Lines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for sit-ups. Do 50 good ones, then stand at ease.
As veterans, we at Concerned Veterans for America know defending freedom comes at a high cost. Our lawmakers should consider that cost when they send troops to war.
If wars don't serve our national interest, our brave men and women shouldn't be deployed into harm's way. Our troops should not be in combat because Congress doesn't want to make tough decisions about military engagement.
Find out how you can join the movement to end our nation's endless wars at cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Front Lines of Freedom promo code. Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Front Lines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome Uri Goldflam. Uri is from, Israel, and he's here in our country, or he was when I talked to him, to share about life in Israel. So welcome to the show, Uri.
Thank you, Danny. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Uri, it's clear that you're a Jew and you're from Israel, but did you grow up there? Where did you grow up? What was your life like getting to where you are now?
Trials and tribulations. Yes, I was born in Israel. My father was born in Israel, but shortly after we moved around, my parents are teachers. They moved to South Africa for 4 years, and then I came back to Israel and moved to the States for a few more years. My father did his PhD at the University of Miami. So I spent some very key childhood years, my teenage years in South Florida, and that's where I adopted my American accent and many of my Americanisms. But I came back here to finish high school and then my military service and university and my career. And that kind of set my career path to spend my time working on the bridge between Israel and the United States. I spent a lot of my time bringing people over to Israel. I lived in the States also as an education director, did teen leadership, summer camping, a lot of things like that. And about, I would say 11, 12 years ago, I decided to quit doing all the things in which I was competent and focus only on the things that I'm truly good at and excel. And that's guiding. I became a full-time tour guide and I spent my time taking people around Israel, church groups, political delegations. I've guided prime ministers, VIPs, families. And so this is what I do. And I love every minute of it, feel very blessed to be able to do it. Which is why when October 7th happened, it was very clear that the tourism industry is once again going into a deep freeze, just like it did over the COVID crisis. And I pivoted to, if people can come to Israel, we decided to bring Israel to the people. So together with some close friends in Michigan and Missouri, people that I've guided in the past, we've recobbled together a lecture tour, mostly in the Midwest, where I spoke to church groups and to civic leaders, business groups, and was very successful. And so we decided to do it again and then again. And so where we met a few weeks ago, I was just finishing up my trip in the United States. I spoke at Grand Rapids to a nice crowd, giving them the inside information or my inside information about what's going on in Israel and try to help people bridge, again, their feelings from their natural proclivity and their leaning to support Israel, understanding that there's good and evil in the world, and Israel is on the side of the good, but finding it very hard to mitigate those feelings with the radical accusations and the horrible images that come on the TV screen. And so that's what I help do and facilitate that conversation.
Well, certainly you did it when we met, because you obviously knew what you're talking about. Before we go on, you mentioned this, and I was sure it's true. You did have to serve a period in the military. That's right. A requirement in Israel. Talk about briefly about what you did in the military.
Well, I began my military service actually as a pilot cadet. I spent 6 months in the Israeli Air Force training to be a pilot until they decided that them and I are not a great match. And rather than fly airplanes, ended up jumping out of airplanes. So I joined the paratroopers and I spent the next 3 years as a paratrooper, including command post as an NCO. And later for the next 20 years after that, in reserves, in the paratrooper reserves. I served in the Second Lebanon War, also fighting Hezbollah. During this whole time, I was also developing my career. I got an undergraduate in international relations and Jewish philosophy from Hebrew U, and then a master's degree as well. And so that was the direction of my career as it developed.
That explains why we get along so well. I'm a retired Army guy. I was a paratrooper, and I fought in Vietnam. So I knew there was something about jumping out of planes that attracted me to you.
It's that leap of faith. It's that leap of faith we take.
Yes, indeed. Okay. This is Colonel Danny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. We're discussing Israel with Uri Goldflam. Okay. Uri, talk to us about what's life in Israel like now. As you mentioned, obviously tourism, everything is messed up, but it's got to be hard to live there. But on the other hand, there's never a time in Israel's history that there wasn't some terrorist probably getting ready to strike somewhere. But this is a lot different. Am I right?
Yeah, it's very, very different for many different reasons, and not in any order of importance. But first of all, it's longer. Right? Most of our wars are short. Israel is a small country, and the people that work in its economy are also people that fight in its wars. Most of the Israeli army is a reservist army. Not giving up any military secrets here, but the standing army is relatively small, and the majority of the Israeli army, up to 350,000 troops, are all reservists. And these are your teachers and your bankers and your professors and your students and your drivers and shop owners and business owners and high tech engineers. I mean, that's who is in the army. And so the wars traditionally that Israel had to fight had to be fast and decisive, so people can get back to work and manage their lives and their economy. This is different because it's been going on for 8 months, and it's probably going to go on for quite some time longer, which poses a whole new set of problems for the Israeli economy and Israeli policy and Israeli society in ways that previous wars hadn't. The second biggest difference, and this is in several orders of magnitude, is the attack and the results of those attacks from October 7th, 2023. The level of malevolence, evil, and horror, brutality that we saw in these attacks is something that we've never experienced. It's the largest number of Jews that have been killed in one day since the Holocaust, but it's beyond the numbers. It's the way that they did it. The glee that they took in the murder and the butchering and the torture and the rape and the broadcasting of all this actions on social media. And that put Israelis into a whole new state of mind. I call it a paradigm shift moment. Nothing is today as it was before October 6th. And for Israelis, it changed a great deal of things. It changed the way they look at the conflict. It changed the way we look at our adversaries and our enemies. It changed the way how we look at war in general. And it changed the way how we see our future in this land. And so it's a very different kind of conflict. But that also speaks to the resilience of the people of Israel. And that's something I think that anybody who visits Israel today will find amazing, amazing, uplifting, truly spectacular. I mean, you think a country at war and people be walking around very, very depressed and very, very sad, and the economy will be coming to a slowdown and people are going to be trying to leave. The truth is, it's the opposite. It's not that there aren't those hardships. I mean, yesterday we had 11 funerals, just yesterday. 11 soldiers were buried yesterday. The tragedy is immeasurable. But at the same time, there is singing and there is life that is pursued and is lived. On the first days after the war started, after October 7th, Israelis left everything anywhere in the world and came back home. It's the only case in history where a war starts in a country and rather people leave, actually people came back. They called them rescue flights. You know, Israeli Airlines sent its planes all over the world to bring Israelis home. The population of Israel increased 3% after the war started because people came home. I'll tell you even more than that. The places where the government fails is where civil society steps up. And we're seeing that now across the board. Civil society, and that includes the reservists, by the way, because they're mostly civilian. Civil society stepped up and filled in all the gaps. The country is managing its affairs. It's not without its problems. I mean, you and I and your listeners all know, and you watch the news, you see the pressures that are coming down on Israel and the internal conflicts also in Israel and the internal arguments and our political system, which is fractured. So again, it's not perfect by any long stretch of the imagination, but overall, the people of Israel are resilient. The people of Israel are strong, and the words that are in everybody's mouth, Am Yisrael Chai, the people of Israel live. There is a strong desire to live, which is why we will win.
And there's more to discuss about Israel, and Uri is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Yeah, it's push-up time. They want you to do 103 push-ups. That's the money I do, well, often. Then take a break and stay in the area. We'll be right back.
Fresh, flash, frozen from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
This hour of Frontlines of Freedom is brought to you by HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net is an online resource and information center dedicated to the welfare of those who have sacrificed for the freedoms, ideals, and morals we Americans hold dear to our hearts. At HelpVet.net, find information on benefit-related issues from education, healthcare, military pay, retirement, VA loans, and resources on education, finance, legal, health and wellness, the military life, moving and housing, travel and entertainment, and much, much more. Visit HelpVet.net, HelpVet.net.
In business for over 30 years with over $1 billion in sales, Universal Coin and Bullion is my go-to source for gold and silver coins. And right now, they're offering our listeners a newly minted 0.99 fine 1 ounce 2024 silver American Eagle coin for just $27. Call 800-UCB-GOLD, 800-UCB-GOLD, or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Uri Goldflam about Israel. So you're telling me something that I've heard many times. I did not experience at all. I did not visit Israel during a war, that the Israeli people don't like thinking about defeat. They stand up for their country and for what they believe is right. Have I interpreted that right?
Yes, absolutely. What this showed us is this conflict that we have right now. And that's something that we've been kind of fooling ourselves for many years, not just us, but many people in the West, a lot of State Department experts and media pundits and even leaders in the West. We've been fooling ourselves to think that we have a conflict over borders, over territory, that the conflict, a lot of people used to say, or even still do, that it's the occupation, the source of the problem. Stop that occupation and you end the conflict. We realize today that's nonsense. The conflict began before the occupation. They've been trying to kill us before Israel was even established as a country. And so we understand now that the war is about our very existence. Israelis understand that if we don't win this war, by winning this war, I mean that we neuter the ability of Hamas and Hezbollah to carry out another October 7th, which they promise they do again and again and again. And we must take away that ability, take apart their military capability, and take apart their ability to rule so they don't regain that ability in the future. Right. Any ceasefire will have to include the removal of Hamas from any legitimate form of sovereign power or sovereign government in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. And that includes also Hezbollah in Lebanon. Without removing those threats, Israelis will not go back to normal. You know, Colonel, that there's people talking about the war in Gaza, but I don't know if your news shows you. We have a war in the northern parts of Israel as well, on the Lebanese border. Now, there's a whole swath of land that became uninhabitable. Dozens of people have already been killed. Hundreds of thousands are in range of Hezbollah rockets, and almost 100,000 have to be removed from their homes. Refugees in their own land, while they, on a daily basis, fire rockets, missiles, and drones across the border. And that is a moment of truth, a moment of reckoning is coming. Yesterday, the Israeli head spokesman of the IDF gave a warning in English to the world and to Lebanon. Hezbollah is pushing the envelope to the point where Israel won't be able to be restrained anymore in its response and will have to really take off its gloves. And the people who will pay the price other than Hezbollah are the people of Lebanon. And I know that's what media is going to report about Israeli aggression at that time. But this war will continue until Israelis can return home in all of Israel, not just in the south around the Gaza Strip.
You know, that makes sense, because as I understand it, and I've been studying this for at least 30 years, the Iranian terrorist groups, Hezbollah, the others, their commitment is to kill all Jews.
Correct.
Now, we fought World War II, but when we fought the Germans and the Japanese, our goal wasn't to kill all Germans or Japs, and their goal wasn't to kill all Americans or Europeans. We fought over power. This is, I won't be happy till you're dead. I don't know how you find a neutral ground for that.
There isn't. This is not new to us, because the Nazis, when it comes to the Jews, actually were fighting to kill all the Jews. I mean, that was their goal.
Yes.
And so this is not something that's new to us. The Iranians have not made secret their intention to destroy Israel. That in their entire philosophy, their entire worldview, and their entire global strategy depends on it. By removing Israel from the equation, they not only remove a stumbling block from their way to the West, but they also galvanize the Arab and the Muslim world behind them to prove that their way is the right way, and they get the support of the 2 billion Muslims around the world when they go to the main course, right? Israel is only a small devil for them. They want to get to America. Bringing down America, bringing down the West is their goal, to create a global caliphate, to create a global Islamic regime. Israel is simply in the way. It's a stepping stone, a springboard, which is why it's so important to them to get this done, which is also why they surrounded Israel, as you said, with proxy armies. Hezbollah in Lebanon, Shiite militias in Syria and Iraq, the Houthis in Yemen and Hamas in Gaza fund them and arm them in order to carry out these attacks in Israel. And that day is now here.
Yes, sir. And that's clear. They don't deny it. But yet much of the world, certainly the UN, thinks that that's not the case. They somehow justify taking hostages. They somehow justify statements that our goal is to kill all Jews. I don't understand that.
So I'm going to borrow a term from a certain presidential candidate who went around with a PowerPoint. He called it an inconvenient truth. This is an inconvenient truth. It's an inconvenient truth for world leaders. You see, in order to face Iran, you must recognize the threat that is Iran. You must start taking their threats and their word seriously. You must have to tell your own constituents, your own citizens, that they're about to embark in another great world war. And that's a very scary thing to do. Unfortunately, you're already in it. Danny, I'm sad to say, but the war is already upon us. The West is already engaged in a war. It's not about Israel and Gaza. That's just the excuse and the tunnel vision that the media insists on using, because they don't want to broaden their lens. If you look at the regional setup, and then you broaden that lens to the global setup, you're looking at a new world order, which is shaping up. You're seeing Russia and China and Iran and North Korea and Venezuela and many of the other BRICS countries who are setting up a new chessboard against the West, each for their own reason, but they're already armies of bots and internet sleuths that are creating mayhem and chaos in American society and radicalizing the discourse. They've been doing it for 40 years. We've just been asleep on our noses since the end of the Cold War. They didn't finish the war. We did. So this decomposing of American society, subversion of American society and Western society has been a strategy that the Russians and the Chinese and the Iranians have been employing for decades. That's what you see now exploding on college campuses, on the streets of America. It's absolutely insane.
Yes, sir. You've hit that ball right out of the park. That's exactly what's going on. And somehow we Americans, too many of us, don't want to see it. But it's obvious. I mean, it's clear.
It's clear to anybody who wants to see it. But like I said, it's a very scary thought. Nobody wants to think that they're already in a war. Nobody wants to go to war. We have in the West, we are very much war fatigued. And I get it. I completely understand it. The price of war is horrible. War is horrible. You and I both know. And anybody who served, we know how horrible that is. The only thing worse is the denial of freedom. And freedom has a cost.
Yes, sir. And that is very clearly their goal. And as you've pointed out, as I recollected, I was a Mideast war planner for over 4 years. There was a little Satan and a big Satan.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Israel and the United States.
That's right.
And I've read that over and over and over and over and over again. And that was 40 years ago. So this is not new.
It's not new, but it's the same. It's the same wonks in D.C. and it's the same State Department analysts that hold the same view, that all these words and all this language that they use is simply, you know, political posturing. And this is the theory. If only they had a better economy. If only they were allowed to export more oil. If only they were allowed to integrate into the global economy, then they would moderate. Right? Suddenly, somehow, miraculously, they will stop hating Israel so much. They will start giving women more rights. They will stop throwing gay people off rooftops and hang them on cranes, as though those are the problems that they need now to address. It's a willful ignorance by Western leadership, and there will be a reckoning one day.
Yes, sir. There cannot fail to be. Very well, we're about out of time. Talk a little bit about what you're doing now and how people can plug into what you're doing since you're helping get the word out.
Yeah. So since October 7th, I've not been able to host groups in Israel. So I go on the road and I'll be back in September for another speaking tour. And if you want to engage, like the one I gave also in Michigan, if you want to engage me and with a speaking engagement, then you can leave details on my website, traveltrailerisrael.com, one word, traveltrailerisrael.com. That's my website. And you will find there information about Israel. You will find there videos about Israel. You can buy a whole video tour, self-guided tours, and even sit at home and enjoy 50 videos from sites all over the country that you can enjoy. And as well as resources, there's a resource button. You can have a list of books, fiction and nonfiction, that can help you unpack some of the issues of the Middle East. You can find a contact sheet there and my email, and feel free to stay in touch. Follow me on social media, Instagram, Facebook, traveltrailerisrael.com, or my name, Uri Goldflam. You'll find them both there.
And if for some reason you forget it, Denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. I know how to get hold of Uri.
And of course, when the day comes and you want to come to Israel, I know a tour guide.
You do. By golly, I'm going to take you up on that. Thank you, brother, for sharing the whole truth about life in Israel now, not just in
Thank
Israel,
very much.
But life Thank in the, United, the world.
Thank you, Colonel. God bless.
You Thank you. Readers. God bless Bye-bye. You. Bye. This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking with the former head of ICE, Tom Homan, about our southern border. Then General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. And of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for pull-ups. Do 40 good ones, maybe 20 more push-ups. Grab some protein, rehydrate with water. And finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.